This is Premier Aerodynamics podcast number 29. And today we're talking about vortex generators. So number 29, we've already done 29 of these bad boys. Check them all out. So today we're looking at a paper called Experimental and Numerical Analysis of the Effect of Vortex Generator Height on Vortex Characteristics and Airfoil Aerodynamic Performance to explain how vortex generators work. So vortex generators have been around for quite a long time, and there are a lot of papers on them. I just selected this paper because it sums them up quite nicely, and it's also open access, so you can access it if you want. The link is in the description. And there are two main types of vortex generators. There are ones called like regular ones, which are the first ones that were investigated. Then there are other ones called micro vortex generators. And this paper looks into both of them. They don't really talk about the difference, but they just group them all together. But there are two different ones, and we'll talk about what they are and why they are different and what their different effects are. So in the abstract, they go and they say the ratio of vortex generator height to boundary layer thickness, so they call that H, that value was studied on a flat plate boundary layer. The values of this H were 0.1, 0.2, 0.5, 1, 1.5, and 2. So 10% of the boundary layer thickness to 200% of the boundary layer thickness. And the reason why this is important is because depending on how tall this boundary, vortex generator is, it will entrain different parts of the flow and have different effects on whatever you have them on. So they looked at a flat plate here. They then also looked at an airfoil. They go on and they say that the results show that the concentrated vortex intensity and vortex generator height presents a logarithmic relationship. So this is somewhat expected, and it's good that they found it, because there's something in aerodynamics called the law of the wall, also called logarithmic law of the wall. And what this general law states is that the boundary layer profile is somewhat logarithmic. And this is not strictly true, but it depends on which part of the boundary layer you're in, but it's a good approximation. So the fact that they also found that the concentration of the vortex intensity is logarithmically related to the vortex generator height is quite interesting. It agrees quite well with that. They also go on and say the vortex intensity is proportional to the average kinetic energy of the fluid in the height range of the vortex generator. So what that means is the energy that the flow has, that this vortex generator is exposed to, is directly going to affect how intense this vortex is. So again, that makes sense, and it's good that they found that. At least we know that. Then they went on and say the effects of the height on the aerodynamic performance of airfoils were studied in a wind tunnel using three different vortex generators, and looked at ones which were 66% of the height of the boundary layer, 100%, and 133%. So going from not as tall as the boundary layer, about 50% of it about, up to significantly bigger than the boundary layer. And they said that the stall angle of the airfoil with and without vortex generators is 18 degrees and 8 degrees respectively. So the vortex generators increase the stall angle by 10 degrees, and that's exactly what they're there for. And we'll talk about why they do that and how they do that. They go on and say the maximum lift coefficient of the airfoil with vortex generators increases by 48.7% compared with the airfoil without vortex generators. They also say that the drag coefficient of the airfoil with vortex generators is 84.9% lower than without, and an angle of attack of 18 degrees. So this makes sense because the stall angle of attack of the airfoil without vortex generators was 8 degrees, whereas with vortex generators, it was 18 degrees. So 18 degrees, the flow is still fairly well attached to the airfoil with vortex generators, which is why you get such a higher lift and such a lower drag. You don't have the profile drag penalty that you do with an airfoil without vortex generators. Interestingly, they say that the maximum lift to drag coefficient of the airfoil with vortex generators is lower than that of the airfoil without vortex generators. So that means that the vortex generators actually were worse for the maximum lift to drag ratio. And that's because for the airfoil without vortex generators, that maximum point came at about 8 degrees. Whereas with vortex generators, it cuts off that lift curve slope and it becomes more flat, but it stays more steady. So that's the trade-off. So let's get into how vortex generators work and how they investigated them in this paper. So they say the principle of underlying vortex generators' control of flow separation is that when a fluid flows over a vortex generator, a concentrated vortex is generated. So a vortex generator comes in many different shapes and sizes. We actually have some CFD on vortex generators. So if you want to check out our YouTube channel, you can find out that video there. But you can get different types. You can get ones that are triangles. You can get ones that are just flat plates that are angled. You can get ones which are right angled triangles. You can get all sorts of really weird and wonderful ones. And the way that they work is that by creating differences in pressure and moving the flow and kind of funneling the flow in different ways, you can then just create vorticity and vortices. And they say, they go on and explain how this works. Under the action of the concentrated vortices, the high energy fluid outside the boundary layer will be drawn into the bottom of the boundary layer, and the energy will be injected into the low energy fluid in the boundary layer, thus delaying the separation of the boundary layer. So what this means is you put a vortex generator on a surface that is experiencing some difficulty with staying attached. And what happens is this vortex generator creates vortices. These vortices are in the boundary layer. And depending on how big the vortex generator is, the vortex can maybe come out of the boundary layer a little bit, depending on how big that vortex is. What this vortex does is it entrains high momentum fluid from higher up in the boundary layer, because as you go higher up the boundary layer, the fluid is moving faster. If you go into the free stream, it's moving even faster again. So you grab that fluid, which is moving very fast, you bring it down to the lower part of the boundary layer, and you mix that in. What that does is it increases the velocity of the flow in this low part of the boundary layer, very close to the wall. And that means this fluid can now resist higher adverse pressure gradients, which you get usually on curved surfaces. And that can then delay stall. So that's how a vortex generator works. You get energy from elsewhere, you pump it into the boundary layer through the use of vortices that you produce. And then you can delay stall. Depending on the height of the boundary of the vortex generator, you can do this better or worse. And there are other things to consider as well, such as the effect it has on lift and on drag, because not always do you get a good benefit in terms of drag. We'll cover that a little bit later on. They go on and they say that for an airfoil with the leading separation bubbles, the separation can be effectively controlled by installing vortex generators in the positions before the separation bubbles and after the peak pressure of the suction surface of the airfoil. So this is important. I've gone through laminar separation bubbles a few times. One good podcast, if you want to listen to, where we look at laminar separation bubbles very in depth, is number 11. It's called NACA 4412 laminar separation bubble. And we go through how they work and how they form on airfoils, what the benefits, what the detriments are. If you want to learn about laminar separation bubbles, go check that podcast out. Then come back here. So just quickly, a laminar separation bubble is what it sounds like. It's when the flow goes over a surface, it detaches, then it re-separates, then it reattaches. And in that region where it detaches and then reattaches, you get this recirculation zone. That's a little bubble. Now, there are some benefits to it, such as an increased lift coefficient. But one major detriment to it is that it's unpredictable. So it can pop at almost any time and you get a catastrophic change in performance of the airfoil, which means that the pilot, for example, has a very difficult time controlling the airfoil now and the plane. So that is not desirable. So by introducing laminar separation bubble, introducing vortex generators ahead of the laminar separation bubble, the vortices then introduce more turbulent flow, and then that can control the laminar separation bubbles. If you want to know how, why these things form and how they form, check out podcast number 11 that I just mentioned. We go through how that happens. I'm not going to go through it here because we've already gone through it there. They go on and they say fluid measurements show that the power of wind turbine blades with vortex generators increased by 20% when the wind speed was greater than 10 meters per second. And when the wind speed was low, the reduction of power is less than 4%. So what they're saying here is there are other research papers that have looked into the effect of vortex generators on wind turbines, which is also another application of these, not just airfoils on planes. And they've found that they can increase the amount of power that you can extract from the flow by 20% when the flow is greater than 10 meters per second. That's because at high velocities, you can get phenomena such as stall or even unsteady flow physics, which means that the blades themselves will start vibrating, which then can damage the gearbox in the wind turbine. When that happens, you have to shut down the wind turbine so you can't actually extract any energy anymore. If you put on wind vortex generator, sometimes you can get rid of some of that unsteadiness, which means you can still operate. Now, as a result of putting vortex generators on, you can get detriments in the performance at lower speeds. So they're saying here, when the speed was low, so below 10 meters per second, the power reduction was less than 4%. So you get this reduction, but at high speeds, you get a massive increase. So overall, they're pretty decent. So in this paper, they looked into CFD and experiments, and that's why I picked this paper. They go through some pretty cool results. What they looked into was first a flat plate, and they had vortex generators on this flat plate. Now, the vortex generator that they used, the type, was effectively a right angle triangle. For those listening, just imagine a right angle triangle installed so the point is somewhat aligned, somewhat pointing upstream, but it's at an angle. And this angle is called the setting angle. And they put these setting angles at 20 degrees. They then had the height of the vortex generator difference from 10% of the boundary layer thickness to 200%. Then they looked at how they performed. In the experimental setup, they had an airfoil now. They used an airfoil called a DU93W210. So this is a pretty funky airfoil. They say that it is an airfoil that's specially designed for wind turbines and was developed and designed by Delft University. So it has a 21% thickness to chord ratio, and the profile of it looks effectively like a supercritical airfoil. So just Google that and you'll get that kind of profile, and that's what it looks like with a 21% thickness to chord ratio. They tested it at a Reynolds number of, based on the chord, of 1 million. And these vortex generators that they used, again, they were right angle ones, and then they just placed them at the setting angle of 20 degrees. And they placed them at 20% of the chord from the leading edge. That's important because you usually want to place them just ahead of where the adverse pressure gradient starts to occur so that you can re-energize the flow just before it hits that adverse pressure gradient and starts decelerating. You want to keep that boundary layer moving. And then they looked into three different heights, as we mentioned earlier, 66% of the boundary layer thickness, 100% and 133%. Now going to the results, first they looked at the boundary layer results. So when they had, flat plate, when they had the vortex generators on there. And the reason why I really like this is because I haven't seen any graph like this before. What they have is the vortex circulation as you go through the vortex generator. So obviously the flow hits the start of the vortex generator. That's at zero length, and then it goes over the vortex generator. And as it gets to the end of the vortex generator, that's a length of one. So you normalize it to the length, and you can calculate what the circulation of that vortex is that you're producing along that path. And I said, I haven't seen anything like this before. And it's really cool because they show the circulation. The reason why the circulation is important is because that tells you how strong the vortex is. Contrary to somewhat common belief, the vorticity is not a thing that determines, you can't really tell how strong a vortex is from its vorticity. It's the circulation. The reason why is because you can have a very small vortex with a very high vorticity, but it may not be that strong. Or likewise, you can have a very big vortex with a very low maximum vorticity, and again, it may not be very strong. You need to calculate the circulation to determine how strong these vortices are. Now, if you have a vortex which is big and has a high maximum vorticity, then you can be generally sure that it will be strong, but you should just really calculate it still just to make sure. So back to this graph, where it shows how this vortex strength effectively develops over the vortex generator. They have the different heights on the vortex generators. And interestingly, when you have a vortex generator of 10% thickness of the boundary layer, it produces, in this particular case, a circulation of 0.125. But if you have a vortex generator which is 200% of the boundary layer thickness, its vortex circulation is now 0.225. So even though it's 20 times taller, the circulation is only about 2 times greater. So the vortex is only twice as strong, even though the vortex generator is 20 times taller. So that shows that these small vortex generators, which are called microvortex generators, because they're much smaller than the boundary layer thickness, still do a very good job. They produce vortices which are still quite strong, even though they are much smaller. So making a much bigger vortex, does not necessarily give you a much greater vortex in terms of strength. That's why having microvortex generators are a very good way to go. Interestingly as well, another thing that you can see from this graph is that with the bigger vortex generators, as you go over the over it, the circulation sort of increases linearly. So as you go over the first 20%, you get a certain amount of strength in the vortex. As you go over 40%, it's about double that and continues on that path. With the microvortex generators, you reach a point where the vortex does not really get any stronger as you keep going over the vortex generator. So for the 10% boundary layer thickness one, so the very small one, this happens at 80% down past the vortex generator. So that, and then it plateaus. So that's also something that I haven't seen before. That's why the CFD is quite nice to look at. Then they have the boundary layer profile. So this is very important. From the boundary layer profile, you can tell a lot about how effective a vortex generator is in preventing stall. They have all these different vortex generators that were on a flat plate from 10% boundary layer thickness to 200% boundary layer thickness. And the boundary layer profile, the velocity normalized. And what they found was as the vortex generator increases in height, the boundary layer profile becomes much more turbulent looking. So it's much sharper inflection. It's got a much higher velocity close to the boundary layer, to the wall, which is what you expect. Now, in this graph, I want to talk about how the difference between microvortex generators and regular vortex generators, as I mentioned earlier. So a microvortex generator, in general, the rule of thumb is anything below 33% the height of the boundary layer, so it only goes up 33% in the boundary layer, that's called a microvortex generator. Anything higher, then becomes a regular vortex generator. Again, that's the rule of thumb. And the main reason why these two things are different is because a microvortex generator will typically just get energy from within the boundary layer and mix it into the lower part of the boundary layer. As you go higher, you start getting the energy from near the free stream and the free stream and bring it in. Now, the problem with these big vortex generators is they protrude into the flow much more. So you're going to get a drag penalty. With the microvortex generators, you don't get that drag penalty because you're still very well within the boundary layer. And the boundary layer doesn't move that fast. So you don't get that penalty. So that's the main difference. And that's why microvortex generators are, generally speaking, better than regular vortex generators in terms of operation. You might be able to get a higher lift coefficient with a regular vortex generator, but when you factor in the drag or the power, the microvortex generators are usually better. So going on, they then look at the airfoil that we mentioned earlier, that funky airfoil with the supercritical one. And then they have some figures that show the lift coefficient, the drag coefficient, and the lift to drag ratio of the airfoils with and without these vortex generators. Now, immediately, all three of the vortex generators, even though they range in height from 66% to 133% of the boundary layer thickness, they all still perform fairly similarly. That is, they delay stall dramatically. If you have the clean airfoil, so the one without vortex generators, the separation angle is 8 degrees. With the vortex generators, it's about 18 degrees, and you get that regular peak that you, and then that dramatic stall drop off. So one thing to note is in terms of the stalling area, you may argue that because the clean airfoil has a plateau to the stall, so it doesn't really have a drop off in lift, it's more just a plateau, that can be argued to be more stable than the airfoils with the vortex generators, because you do get that massive drop in stall. Now, interestingly, for the drag, the biggest airfoil, the biggest vortex generator, increased the drag coefficient of the airfoil at low angles of attack. So pre-stall, the drag coefficient is significantly higher for the large vortex generator, which is what I described earlier when I talked about micro vortex generators and regular vortex generators. This then dramatically reduces the lift to drag ratio, because you have still good lift, but the drag is much worse now. And you have to wait until post-stall to then get a higher lift to drag ratio. So before we go any further, I just want to say, check out everything we do at Aerodynamics. Check out the instrumentation we do. Check out the courses we put on. We do CFD, we do experimental, and we do theoretical to make you a better aerodynamicist. And check out the International Aerodynamics Conference. It's a conference every year, so aerodynamics can get together and talk about aerodynamics. So all those links can be found in the description. So moving on, they also looked at the pressure coefficient of the airfoil. So they have the wings, these airfoils, at different angles of attack. And they have the pressure distribution over them. And at 0 degrees and 5 degrees, the pressure distributions are not really any different between the different vortex generation configurations and the clean airfoils. But once you get to 10 degrees, 15 degrees and higher, then you start to get a difference. And the reason why is because of that flow separation on the clean airfoil. So yeah, 8 degrees, if you remember, the clean airfoil was experiencing flow separation. The vortex generator airfoils were not. So at 10 degrees and higher, the pressure distribution over the airfoil was greater. So you're still producing a lot more lift. And that effect is exacerbated as you go higher, because it was even at 18 degrees, the airfoil was still producing lift, the flow is still attached. Now past 18 degrees, you then get that reduction, because both tops of the airfoils, the ones with vortex generators and the ones without, experience separation. So as you expect, below 18 degrees, the vortex generator airfoils typically produce a better pressure distribution graphs. So in conclusion, they talked about what they did. They said that there is a logarithmic relationship between the vortex circulation and vortex height, and the average kinetic energy of the fluid in the boundary layer also has a logarithmic relationship with the vortex generator height. So the vortex intensity of the vortex generator is proportional to the average kinetic energy of the fluid in the boundary layer. So what this means is the boundary layer profile is kind of logarithmic, as dictated by the law of the wall. That means that as you go higher up, the velocity of the boundary layer doesn't really increase that much. It increases a little bit, but it sort of plateaus out. And the vortex circulation is proportional to how much energy you have to begin with. So in the lower parts of the boundary layer, where the increase in velocity as you go higher up is linear, the circulation of these vortices increase linearly as well. But as you get to the logarithmic part, then the circulation starts to become logarithmic as well, in terms of how much stronger it will become with a boundary layer, with a vortex generator height. That is why you can still produce strong vortices with micro vortex generators. They say the greater the height of the vortex generators, the stronger the intensity of the concentrated vortices, and the stronger the flow control ability. But the greater the profile drag produced by the vortex generators. And again, this is somewhat logarithmic in terms of how well they do this, but you get a massive increase in profile drag. The fluid kinetic energy in the boundary layer is the lowest when the height of the vortex generators is 10% and 20% of the thickness of the boundary layer, which is to be expected because they are only dealing with very slow moving fluid to begin with. So they've got a lot to work with. Don't have much to work with compared to the bigger vortex generators, but they still do a very good job. From the result of the wind tunnel experiments, the stall angle of attack of the airfoil without vortex generators is 8 degrees, but with vortex generators, it's 18 degrees. So the vortex generators increase the stall angle of the airfoil by 10%, but there's also a dramatic stall. So you do get a bit more of an uncontrollable airfoil. And they finish their paper with a very interesting sentence. They say, if considering the optimal lift to drag ratio, a vortex generator of 66% of the boundary layer thickness can meet the requirements. So with the Air4, if you remember, they tested out three different vortex generators, 66%, 100%, and 133% of the boundary layer thickness. 66% was the smallest one that they tested, and yet they're saying that this is the best one out of all three that they tested. And that's because you're getting this boundary layer separation delay, but you're still not producing as much drag. So that's why this one is better. So bigger is not always better in terms of vortex generators. It is other times, but not here. So consider micro vortex generators. And that's the end of this podcast. So make sure to like and subscribe. Check out what we do here at ProDynamics. Check out the instrumentation we do. We do instruments for wind tunnels. We do traverses. We do PIB. Check out the courses we put on. We will have that friend, you know, he's not very good at aerodynamics and they need to get better. Just tell him to do one of our courses and it'll be much better. We do CFT, we do experiments, and we do theoretical, so they can look at those and check out the International Aerodynamics Conference that we put on every year. Links in the description. Peace out.